Strike presents Your Hit Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889, and by WTIC. You'll meet our special guest after these words from Burritt.
Buying a new car in 1972? If so, bank credit may cost you less. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, we offer low-cost, convenient auto loans. But we can do more than just put you on the road. We help you establish credit with a bank. We give you cash buyer leverage. And above all, you either start or continue a relationship with a large and progressive mutual savings bank. Once your credit is established, you may want to purchase a new home, improve your existing home, or take a personal loan to finance your trip across the country. Whatever your borrowing needs, it will pay you to start doing business with the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Once an established Burritt customer with good credit, you become a preferred Burritt borrower. So don't wait. Come into any office of the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
Now to your host, Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is Ed Corcoran with some 2,500 hours of radio memories on tape. It's good to have you with us again, Ed.
Thank you, Dick. It's nice to be here.
Our special guest tonight is one who is truly outstanding, and I've looked forward to this broadcast for many, many months now. We've had it promised to us, and it's finally arrived. Our guest is Raymond Edward Johnson, who was, Raymond, your host for how many years on Inner Sanctum Ray? Do you recall?
I don't really remember, because this was broken up by my having to go into the Army, but it was about 38 to, I was in from 38, went into the Army, 45. And after that, I very foolishly did not go back. But I want especially to talk about that, about the ridiculous, one of the most ridiculous things that I ever did was that I did not want to go back to Inner Sanctum, as I thought of this in the Army, because I thought, well, I know... I know so much about acting, and I love doing various characters so much that I won't go back, all of the time forgetting that my every inflection was being copied by actors who wanted to be doing this Raymond the host with their own name, so forth, which they did.
Had you created the character that we knew as Raymond?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. I can remember very vividly High Brown coming into famous jury trials when I was doing one of the attorneys, in one of the breaks, High said, "I have this show here, Ray. I think this is something that you could do well. It's kind of a different mystery show. I want to do something with this character, but I don't quite know what. It has to be handled with a kind of sense of humor, but yet with a feeling for the mystery. Well, you take the script, see what you can do with it." And looking at the script, I fell in love with the idea, and no problem. From there, we worked. And because of Hyman Brown's excellent, very easy, very, very easy handling, I was able to work at this thing that was breaking down everything that went before in a new handling. of the character, and
It was a marvelous character. Ed, I'm sure you recall the various nuances that Ray was able to put into his voice to create it. Always menacing and yet with a kind of a
sense
twinkle
of humor
in your eye.
Yeah. That's kind of the way Vincent Price worked.
I have felt very strongly that the whole breakdown with the sponsors in the sacredness of the sponsor's word was broken down by the sense of humor in the handling of cruelty and dying, whatever kind of mayhem we may have gone into, by Inner Sanctum, which was unheard of before, but the people who pay the bills, if you're going to pay out money, there's no sense of humor in that. You know. Nothing funny about that.
Ray, can you recreate Raymond, your host, for us?
Oh, yes. No.
Please, would you?
Good evening. How are you this evening? Oh, what a wonderful pleasure it is to talk to you, you intelligent people. And I know so surely that you would never be carried away by listening and believing any of this awful nonsense that we create for you, would you? Oh, no, of course you wouldn't. Well, at any rate, this little story that we have tonight starts with this gentleman is working very quietly, very easily, very concerned. And because this story is about an invisible man who appears every once in a while, it was very interesting that he was feeling at the nape of his neck a certain thing that might very well have been an invisible man? Oh, can you imagine how you might have reacted to any one of these things? Now, of course, you wouldn't believe all this, would you? Well, now our story, now having been told, and we leave you after this glorious half hour, we leave you until next week, and we say good night. Pleasant dream.
Oh, that's marvelous. That's beautiful. I want to talk more about Inner Sanctum, but I want to find out more about your background, your career, Ray.
Right.
Which began for you, as far as radio is concerned, in the Windy City of Chicago in the mid-1930s.
Well, really, it didn't. It began in Kenosha. I needed money to just exist. And my sister, God bless her, had said, you know, really, Ray, that you ought to try to get into WRJN in Kenosha. And I said, well, what? What'll I do? Said, will you be an announcer? An announcer? Could I be an announcer? Said, well, you do. You go down there and ask about this. Well, I did. And I got a job. I got a job at WRJ. That's where I began. That's where I began. Doing announcing, hanging the soundproofing, going out and trying to collect bills, did everything that everybody did in the beginning of radio. Oh, yes, WRJ. And
well, then you must have decided that this was indeed a profession that you could make worthwhile for yourself.
Yes, yes. And from there, I went to the Goodman Theater in Chicago. I heard through a friend of mine who had been at the Goodman Theater that it would be possible to maybe get a scholarship, which I did. I wrote and got a scholarship and started at the Goodman Theater. It was a rather poor 3 years. I was a poor man going through the theater and lived with the by grace of getting work in the cafeterias who fed me.
But then you discovered that radio paid money.
Oh, yes. I was simply amazed when I did the show that it was so easy. After working days, weeks, months on a character and trying to memorize these lines and get the character set that I could, in a few hours, I could do this, enjoy myself, and actually earn money. Which I did.
The Chicago market, of course, was a major one for feeding the network.
Oh,
many
yes.
of the dramatic programs originated from Chicago.
Yes.
So what was the factor that made you decide to move to New York?
Oh, that was the theater. I had worked with people in Chicago who had moved to New York, so I knew that I could make the change to New York fairly easily by working in radio first and then work theater in New York, which was the thing that I dearly loved to get into.
Well, Ray, as we've been able to determine this whole picture from the few actors that we've had the opportunity to interview, there was a small nucleus of actors who got 90% of the work.
Yes, that's true.
And were you able to break into this magic circle?
Yes, I was. I was, very fortunately. It's very easy to understand that there would be a nucleus, because with the advent of the Radio Actors Union, it began to be a rather expensive thing for the hiring of actors, and so money could only be saved by the actors who could do these things well and quickly. Yes, I was able to get my little niche in there. I worked hard. I would do as many as 4 or 5 shows a day. And this would go on day after day after weeks, and it was great sport, great fun.
Ray, as you know, Ed Corcoran has a wonderful collection of old radio shows that he has built over the years, and I guess he can come up with just about any show that you've been on. Mm. So if you had the opportunity right now, what show would you like to hear again?
My goodness. I would love to hear any part where you thought that I was fairly good.
Well, all right. You're going to leave it up to me. That I'm going
yes.
to, I'm going to take an excerpt from the greatest story ever told.
The greatest story ever told. The pale winter moon is high in the heavens over Judea, and in the dark sky, all other stars seem small compared to the one great star which shines there. Shepherds have seen the star and know it is a sign from God. And the many travelers who sleep in the open fields have seen it and felt its power. And except for one man in Jerusalem, the star seems a sign of comfort and inspiration. Yet this one man has more power than all other men in Judea, for he is Herod the Great. And he stands now on the uppermost parapet of his palace, looking toward the star. With each passing moment, he becomes more fearful. And as his fear increases, so does his anger grow, until eventually he calls out,
Captain! Captain! Come here at once.
Yes, Your Majesty. Is this something you wish?
That cursed star is still there. I never should have let them go. It was a mistake.
They, sir?
3 kings coming from far-off lands, seeking a newborn king. It was a mistake to let them go.
Your Majesty does not often make mistakes.
I have no patience with flattery, Captain, not now. The way they talked about a newborn king cannot be dismissed as merely a legend or a superstition. If there is such a king, he must be found and destroyed.
You have only to give the word, Your Majesty.
Now we must be neither anxious nor quick. We must be clever. Before he can be killed, he must be found. And the only way we know to find him is to find those 3 kings and bring them back here.
But they promised to return, didn't they?
We cannot depend upon promises. They have set out for Bethlehem. You will find them. You will bring them back.
Benjamin! Benjamin, where are you?
I'm here, sir.
Sleeping, were you? Well, there will be no sleep for us this night. We must prepare at once for a journey.
A journey, sir? In the middle of the night? Is there any danger, sir? Any trouble?
No, there is danger, but not for us. And as for trouble, this is the kind of trouble a man can find very worthwhile.
Sir?
One man's trouble can be used by another man to his advantage. And such a chance as this, I had not expected it so soon. You will prepare the animals and we'll be on our way.
As you say, sir.
Tell me, Benjamin, how would you like to be an aide to a general?
A general, sir? Are you thinking of having me transferred?
What if you could be aide to a general and not be transferred, huh?
You, sir? You will be made a general?
Seems fantastic to be raised from a captain to a general in one step, but it is possible. So hurry, this is important. Benjamin, are you listening to me?
I'm sorry, sir. I was staring up at the sky, at that star. Watch out, sir. There is someone there ahead on the road.
Rein in your horse. We will stop and see who is fool enough to travel on foot by night. You there. Stand where you are.
Yes, sir. I will not move. Please, I'm a peaceful man. I shall cause no trouble.
You'll come here. It is an order given by an officer of King Herod.
I've never done anything wrong. If there has been a disturbance, if that's what you're interested in, I had nothing to do with that, sir. It was the shepherds.
Shepherds? What about the shepherds?
Well, it was very strange, sir, the way they came along the road, not walking, but running. And the things they talked of, say, to be honest with you, I think they were daft, sir, out of their minds.
What made you think that?
Well, it's the way they talked about the star and the voice.
What voice?
Well, they kept saying it was a voice from heaven, sir.
See here, old man, I'll hold you accountable for every word you say. If you're lying to me, you will suffer for it.
But, sir, I'm not lying. They talked to me. They asked me to come with them to see the newborn king.
The newborn king?
Yes, sir, that's what they said. They said that he was born. The voice told them.
Where were they going?
They said to Bethlehem, sir.
Bethlehem,
yes,
huh?
Sir.
Very good. Well, Benjamin, did you hear that? I tell you, Bethlehem is a city of destiny for me. Innkeeper, open up here.
Who is it? Who is it this time?
I told you that would bring him. Open up! Innkeeper.
I'm sorry there's no room at this inn tonight. I'm very sorry.
We have not come asking for a room, but if we had, believe me, you would find it soon enough, for we are from Herod's palace.
From Herod's palace?
Aye.
I knew there would be trouble tonight. All these strange visitors. And now this. Believe me, sir, we are innocent. We've done nothing wrong, nothing at all. We've taken in some poor wayfarers and given them a place to sleep in the stable. Surely there's no crime in that.
Look.
Sir, why are you laughing?
Well, I was laughing at the way you tremble. Ezra?
How do you know my name?
So I'm right, it is you.
Who are you?
You don't know me? You don't remember the boy who was your friend? A boy by the name of Cyrus?
Cyrus.
What is it, Ezra? Why do you stand there and stare at me so?
It's still difficult to believe. To see you in your uniform with Herod's insignia on your breastplate. Yes, I'm very much surprised.
I'm here on important business and you're wasting my time. Now, I have some questions which you must answer. Three kings from far-off countries came to stay in Bethlehem. Did they come here?
They are peaceful men. Surely they've not transgressed any law.
Then they are here. You've seen them.
Yes, I've seen them.
And some shepherds, too, who came telling a strange story?
Yes, the shepherds, too.
What brought them to this door?
I do not know.
Then perhaps I will tell you. A child. A newborn child.
You know that?
There's very little I do not know. Now you will show me where the child is.
You must understand, this is a very special child. Since his birth, many strange things have happened.
Kings have come from far-off places to see him, and shepherds have been driven mad by strange voices because of him.
You could not say that if you'd seen their faces as I have. Not mad, my friend. Inspired.
Take me to the child. Open the door.
Cyrus, please.
Open the door, I said. So, I have found all of you. You, shepherds. You three, the kings. Am I right? And there, lying in the manger. Let me see for myself. And this is... Is this the newborn child?
Yes, my friend.
Such a child. I have never seen such a child before. But this whole place seems to glow with his presence. And the way they all kneel and worship, shepherds and kings side by side. I see it, and yet I cannot believe it.
Is it so difficult to believe, my friend? Are not all men the children of God, and therefore equals before God? You may kneel too, if you wish.
You would never say that to me if you knew why I came here and who sent me.
I may not know why you have come here, but I do know who sent you.
By the insignia on my breastplate?
I had not even noticed that, my friend. I knew from the look in your eyes. God has brought you here. For what purpose, I do not know. But it cannot be an evil purpose, or else he would not have brought you to this place on this night.
Do you really believe that? Can you look at me and say that God has brought me here for a good purpose?
Yes, my friend. So if you wish, you may kneel here too and pray. Come, my friend, kneel, pray. You will feel better.
Listening to The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel. Brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. And by 1080 Radio, WTIC in Hartford.
Burritt Mutual Savings Bank asks you this question. Why should you save? Burritt Mutual Savings Bank will also try to answer. The reasons for savings are almost endless. 1, it can open the door to your new home. 2, it can give you the means to new furniture, a new car, a boat, a vacation. 3, it can help send your children to college. 4, it can give you that glorious feeling of independence and prosperity. Don't ever feel that you have to have large amounts to save. At Burritt, deposits as small as $1 are welcome. Really welcome. Start now and save for all these reasons and perhaps some of your own. If you can't save a lot, save a little. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, where deposits are safe and earn good dividends. Start your account tomorrow.
Member FDIC. Now back to your host, Dick Bertel.
Our guest tonight on the Golden Age of Radio, Raymond Edward Johnson. Raymond, your host, and of course, one of the most versatile radio actors in the business. Let's talk about Inner Sanctum again. It started, I believe you said, in 1938.
About 1938, yes.
And whenever I think about this program, whenever I talk about this program, immediately your voice comes to mind and a special sound effect, the squeaking door.
Oh, yes.
So I've got to ask you, because I've heard so many conflicting stories, how the squeaking door was created.
Well, It had to be. It had to be. The idea was realized that Hammond Brown had a darn good idea in the fact that this would be introduced by a squeaking door. So it became the necessity of the department, since this would be called on every time Inner Sanctum Mysteries was on, that we would have a squeaking door. So they had to get the best, the longest, the most awful squeak that they could get. And they worked on this. And they used vinegar, and they used everything that would give them the best squeak. And finally, they got a good, long, great, wonderful squeak. Horrendous and just fine. So this door that had this squeak was put onto this little foundation, this rolling foundation, and was very carefully taken in by several men into the sound department when it was all through for the night, kept there and rolled out the next time. But, and this is absolute truth, it seems that during the week, some enterprising sound man just happened to walk into the sound department and thought he'd tried this door and thought, isn't this awful? We've got to take care of this. And so he promptly did, oiled it beautifully, and took care of that squeak for all time until they went at it again. They had to work again weeks, months, to get that squeak, but this actually happened.
Oh, that's a great story.
Dick, how about, why don't we play this squeaking sound together with Raymond as he sounded in those days?
You're going to open the door to the past,
open,
are you?
Open the door to the inner sanctum, and everybody hang on to your hat.
Good evening, friends. And let me welcome you once more to the inner sanctum. This is Raymond, your host. Come in, won't you, and sit down. No, I'm not being polite. I'd prefer you to sit, see? Because within the next 5 minutes, you're going to be so weak in the knees that you won't be able to stand. Inner Sanctum Mysteries again has the pleasure of bringing you the famous star of radio, screen, and stage, now featured in the current Broadway success, Arsenic and Old Lace, Boris Karloff. This evening, Mr. Karloff appears in Robert Newman's dramatization of Edgar Allan Poe's famous story, The Tell-Tale Heart, presented for your entertainment by the makers of Carter's Little Liver Pill, the best friend to your sunny disposition. And now our story. A story based on a tale by the greatest master of the macabre that ever lived. Edgar Allan Poe. The story of a man who could hear not only every sound on earth, but even things that don't exist. So, turn down the light, call in a friend or neighbor to keep you company, and listen to Boris Karloff as Simon in A Tell-Tale Heart. It's a little later that same evening, Simon is sitting in the upper story of the old deserted mill, waiting. Listen.
Sleep, Oliver, sleep. Aren't you ever going to sleep? But you're not asleep yet. I can tell by your breathing, the way your heart's beating. And that's what I must wait for. The time when you're really asleep. When you close those hawk eyes that can see even in the dark. I could read murder in my face when I didn't know it was there myself. Wait a minute. There. Now you're asleep. And now I must go. Easy with the door. Careful. And even more careful going down the stairs. Don't creak like that. Suppose he wakes. No, he can't. He won't wake up. He can't. And even if he does. Here we are. The door to his room. How shall I do it? Those sacks he's using as a pillow. If I pulled them out and held them over his face and smothered him, that's an exertion. Then I wouldn't have to touch him, I wouldn't.
Who's there? Who's there? There is someone there. I can see you. It's Simon.
Yes, it's Simon.
What do you want? What are you doing here? I know, you've come to kill me.
Yes, Oliver. I've come to kill you.
Philip, you can't do that. You can't. You...
Yes, Oliver, I can. And I have to. Oh, please don't struggle like that. I'm stronger than you are. You can't get away from me. You can't. You can't. That noise. Hear it? Your heart. Beating, pounding, driving the blood through your veins. Beating more slowly now. Slower and fainter. Running down like a tired clock. I'm not going to let you go until it's stopped. So don't struggle. Don't struggle, please. Just a few seconds more. I can hardly hear it now. Just a faint, throbbing murmur. And now, even that's gone. Yes, it's stopped. And you're dead. Oliver, listen. I didn't want to do it. I didn't, but I had to. You were only interested in hurting people. That's why I had to do it. And that's why I'm not going to give myself up or confess that I killed you, because I could still help people. You understand, don't you? That's why I must get rid of your body, hide it somewhere. Oh, what am I to do with you? I know. I'll keep you here, tear up the floor and hide you underneath it. Let's see now, this crowbar. This one here, there. That should be big enough. And now, in you go. Goodbye, Oliver. Goodbye. Just put these boards back. Nail them down again with the same rusty nails. And it's done. Now I'll spread this dust over the cracks. No one will be able to tell what I've done. No, not even with your eyes. If you could still use them. What's that? A light. A lantern outside. Someone at the door. Maybe Christie's come back again.
Yes? Who is it?
It's Trent. The constable.
The constable? What do you want?
Oh, nothing much. Thought I'd dropped in. Hello.
Come in, Constable. Come right in.
Our guest tonight on the Golden Age of Radio is Raymond Edward Johnson. And we've opened that squeaking door to a half hour of horror, as you used to say. So effectively, Ray. But there were many other shows, of course, on which you appeared, and you certainly were in that strip that I listened to as a youngster. I call it the strip from 5:30 or 5 to 6:30, in which Mandrake the Magician appeared somewhere in there.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I was Mandrake the Magician, and I remember so vividly the opening, the Latin opening, which meant I invoke the power of magic. Invoco legem magicarum.
Well, there I am. Back in the late 30s. Yeah, That was an exciting show.
Yes, it was. We had a lot of fun.
And it was not a network show, as I understand. It was a
no, I don't
transcription
think so.
Yes, service?
Yes, that's right. It was a transcription service.
Can you explain that for our audience who may not be familiar with the difference between a live network program and a transcription series?
Well, the syndicated shows were, like they are on television, Dick, they were made up in transcriptions. Then they went all over the country, and the stations played them at their own particular time spot. They weren't always at the same time each day, and then much like our syndicated TV of today. And of course they were recorded while the networks were all live shows, and when you heard them they were being done that instant in time as opposed to delayed like you have in the syndicated.
Well, who would sponsor a program like
well,
that?
Well, it could be a national or mostly local, like the Lone Ranger was syndicated in the beginning in New York. It was Silver Cup Bread, Dick. I think you remember that. It was very good.
Yes, a pint of milk in every loaf.
It tasted like it too. And then later that went on Mutual, and then I think another company took it over on a national basis, NBC, National Biscuit Company, somebody like that, but usually it was a pretty good-sized local firm that would take over. Blue Coal, I think, did it in the shadow for some years, too, on the syndication of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it did make available a lot of shows to the smaller stations that didn't have network facilities. They could play drama, too.
Ray, what might be considered your most memorable broadcast, the tensest broadcast where perhaps you lost the script, or what stands out in your mind is?
Well, there was one time I was doing Gangbusters. Do you remember, Gangbusters always had towards the end of the show, this little bit where we said, everyone, watch out for so-and-so and so-and-so, 5 feet tall, and so forth, names spelled, such and such and such and such. Well, at this particular time, I don't know why, but I am, of course, Swedish, of Swedish parents. I love the Swedish language, very interested in the Swedish language, but for some reason, on the air, I began to take this name of this woman, and I began to spell this in Swedish. And it began to, after a bit, it began to affect my sense of humor, and I began to through this thing, and then I noticed that the control room was also beginning to laugh and to scream, and suddenly they were affected by this that I no longer could see heads or faces in the control room. Everybody was on the floor, including the actors in the studio, as I was trying to control myself, spelling this name in Swedish, which had no right to be done this way. Why it happened, I have no idea. And this was a show that you never snickered at. The Gangbusters, and done by the man, what was his
Philip
name?
Philip
H. Lloyd.
Philip,
you don't laugh at Philip H. Lloyd. And strangely enough, it was just after that that I got a leading part from Philip H. Lloyd as Joe Lincoln in The Treasury Agent.
Well, of course, there were soap operas, there were programs like Gangbusters, but I guess every once in a while you would work in what would be considered the Cadillac of a radio program, a Lux Radio Theater or a Ford Theater, something of this nature.
Oh, yes, I remember.
How did they differ, Ray, from the rehearsal to the finished product?
Well, it was largely, the very beginning was a good script. And with the good script, they usually it was well directed. It was well cast. So it was, and of course, it's a pleasure for an actor to work with the best of his own actors and the best of his directors. That's a real joy, to be actually paid for something like that. That's a real ball.
Yeah. Do you think we might hear something from the Ford series, Ed?
Yes, I just acquired one, and speaking about a Swedish accent, we're going to hear a genuine one here now, because that's what he plays in this particular excerpt. This is a Swedish doctor who works with Dr. Arrowsmith in the very famous Sinclair Lewis play, and this was a very fine adaptation, but I still think you'll recognize Raymond. He'll come through.
This is the Ford Theater. Our play today, Sinclair Lewis's famous novel, Arrowsmith, the human story of the sacrifices a doctor made for science.
Thank you.
Ford Theater is presented by the Ford Motor Company, makers of Ford, Mercury, and Lincoln cars, and Ford trucks, farm tractors, and industrial engines. In the past three generations, millions of Americans have learned to rely on Ford products. For three generations, Ford has led the way in the development of more dependable, more economical transportation. Today, in the third generation, more than 8 million Americans prefer Ford products. They know from experience you can depend on Ford. This afternoon, we welcome home our regular Ford Theater spokesman, Howard Lindsay, who during the past 3 weeks in Detroit has launched his highly successful comedy, Life with Mother. We take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Howard Lindsay.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be back again here on the stage of the Ford Theater to preside over this, the final production in the current series of Ford Theater presentations, Sinclair Lewis's great novel, Aerosmith. Act three of the Ford Theater's presentation of Aerosmith. Martin Aerosmith's elation at finding a new germ destroyer was matched only by his chagrin at learning that his discovery had been anticipated by a European scientist. Martin has returned to work, harder than ever, at the McGurk Institute Laboratories, little knowing that his career, his whole life, is moving toward its climax.
That third year at the McGurk Institute, I sunk myself in a grind of drudgery. I was concentrating on immunization. Month after month, my work, my hands, my technique became more adept. My days more steady, less fretful. I was working on bacteriologically produced immunity to disease. I injected rats with deadly bubonic germs and produced an immunity to the plague. My lab became known as the pest house. And here one day, I received a visitor. Hey, get out of here. You know nobody's supposed to come in here.
Oh, so it is as I predicted.
Dr. Sandalis.
Didn't I tell you that night in Minneapolis one day you would join up with us, Gottlieb and Sandalis? Sandalis and Gottlieb, the man of action and the man of science.
Oh, gosh, it's good to see you, sir. So what are you doing here? I read you were on your way to the West Indies.
I am. They have a fine epidemic of bubonic plague down there, the real thing, on the island of St. Hubert. If it isn't stopped quick, it spreads to the whole West Indies, and after that, who knows? I'm on my way to fight it, but first, I must recruit my army.
The rat catchers?
Yeah, you remember that. Your traps, I have. 7 beautiful, deadly new kinds, and flamethrowers and a lot of hydrocyanic acid gas. But it is not enough to kill rats. We must also save humans. Aerosmith, I hear a lot from many people of this new serum you have. What do you call it, you lab men with the big names?
Bacteriophage. Phage for short.
Phage. Well, my friend, you with your serum and me with my rat poison. Who knows what we could do? Maybe one day we cure the whole world of plague.
You mean you're asking me to go with you?
Yeah. Martin, when do we start?
I'm going with you.
You are not.
I am, and it's no use arguing.
Well, Leora, it's not safe, don't you understand?
Oh, you can tell that to other people, not to me. Of course it's safe. Just inject that new serum into me, and I'll be absolutely all right. Oh, I've got a husband who cures things. I have.
We sailed on the steamer Burien with Sundalia's equipment and my cases of serum. As we steamed south into the rising heat, for a few days I almost forgot my experiment and our mission. I looked at Leora, so thin a little figure stretched out on the deck chair beside me, and I felt as if I were looking at her for the first time.
Ha ha ha!
Ahoy! Ahoy there! You the McGurk Commission?
Yeah.
We're ready to take you ashore. I'll come up and give you a hand.
Dr. Sundarius?
You are that port, Doctor.
Ah, not exactly. I'm Dr. Stokes of St. Swithin's Parish. We're all of us almost everything nowadays. The port doctor died a couple of days ago.
I'm Sundelius.
Yes, Dr. Sundelius, I've read of your work.
And this is Dr. Aerosmith and Mrs. Aerosmith.
How Mrs.
How do you do?
How do you do, Doctor?
Dr. Aerosmith, I'm glad you're here. I read your plague serum paper and was very much impressed.
Good.
But I'd better tell you something before we go ashore. You'll be opposed here. The Surgeon General has lost his head, running in circles, afraid to burn the villages of Kirib where most of the infection is. Aerosmith, I have a notion of what you want to do experimentally. If the Surgeon General balks you, or if you find it's too late, you come to me in my parish if I'm still alive.
Thank you, Dr. Stokes.
How many bubonic cases you got now?
Lord knows, maybe 1,000 and 10 million rats. Oh, sorry, I haven't slept in days. Well, we'd better be going ashore. Is this all your stuff?
No.
Hey, boy!
Yes,
get this baggage ashore in these cases.
Yes, Doctor.
Leora, don't come ashore. Stay on the ship. You can still go back, please.
Not come? Me? The secretary and technical assistant of the McGurk, whatever it is? Oh, Sandy, are you out of your mind?
St. Hubert was a silent city. We walked down deserted streets. House shutters were closed against the oppressive heat. A crying woman and a bewildered child followed an open wagon on which were heaped dozens of stiff bodies. We turned around and walked back to our house. With Leora's help, I started to improvise a laboratory. We unpacked the serum. I started to prepare my notes for the controlled experiment, half the population to be injected. Half not. Sundelius got out his equipment, strapped his wrists, put on high boots, and made ready for his rat crusade.
Martin, Leora, tonight I start on the village of Carib. You watch me. I am Captain General of Rat Killers. Without rats, we have no fleas, and without fleas, there is no bubonic. So I fix them quick. In 1 week, there will be not one rat on this island. You watch. When they hear I have come, they will kill themselves. I just walk into a warehouse and rats say, here's all Uncle Gustav. What's the use? And they turn up their toes and die.
Gustav.
Hmm? Martin. Hello?
I've been looking for you everywhere.
I'm sorry, Martin. I feel a little tired. I'll lie down for a while. Well, Martin, what do you think of our work? Those rats, we shot them with guns, we poisoned them with gas, we burned them with fire. It is, as I told you, Martin, in this whole village after 3 days, not one rat left.
Gustav, what is it? Your eyes. You've got a fever.
Yeah, Martin, I think it's got me. Some flea got me from one of those cursed rats. I was just thinking I better quarantine myself. I, who have isolated so many, it is my turn. Yeah, I have fever. All right.
I'm going to take you home, Gustav. We'll nurse you.
No, you will not take me home.
I'm going to give you the serum right now. This time you can't stop.
Martin, don't try to fool me. It's too late for serum. It's too late for anything.
Gustav.
Martin, give all those poor people the serum. Save them. All of them. Oh, Martin, I didn't think it could hurt so much.
Get smile power, the kind of confident, contented countenance that comes from cash, salted away cash, in a Burritt Mutual Savings Bank at the highest legal savings bank interest rate. And You don't need a lot of money to do it. You can save a little. It's the constant, patient, every payday habit of saving that really counts. At the Big B, we love your small deposits. We know they grow for you and for us. Result, we will both have smile power. Plus, we help with our high interest rates paid to you on your savings. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Deposits insured to $20,000 by FDIC.
Our guest tonight on the Golden Age of Radio, Raymond Edward Johnson. Well, I liked your acting as I always have, Ray, and that brings me to a logical question. When did you finally give up radio? Was it in the late 40s, in the 50s? When? What happened?
Well, I didn't give up radio. I think it was that...
Radio gave up
that. That's right. Radio gave the ghost, and this was a kind of sad day. I imagine this was in the 50s.
Of course, television played a major role in the loss of radio as we knew it, but...
That's right.
Do you feel that the network executives did all they could to keep it alive? We've heard conflicting stories. Hans Conried on this program once said that it was his opinion that they dynamited radio in 1953 in favor of television. They just said, that's it, we're...
I think so. I think that they were opportunistic in the fact that here is good money. I believe he's right. Mm-hmm. I believe he's right. No, of course they dynamited it.
Well, we've certainly lost something here in this country because Canada still has radio as we knew it, perhaps not to the extent that we knew it in the
40s. Oh, yes, I've heard Canadian
radio.
But
it's excellent radio.
Excellent.
Great Britain has radio. Vincent Price has just signed a contract, I believe, to host a series on the BBC. Australia is very active.
In South Africa.
Of course. And do you feel that there will be a renaissance in this country someday?
Well, I do feel that this is a great loss. Speaking now of one of the most difficult things to do well, and this was the mystery. Mystery shows that we did very well on Inner Sanctum. That especially is a great loss. I do not care how well a mystery show is done on television. You cannot expect to vie with the power of your own imagination. And your own imagination will build the most beautiful sets and will make the most horrible things more horrible. It is your imagination.
I hope one day we'll have it again.
So do I.
Raymond Edward Johnson, thank you very much for being with us tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio. It's been tremendous fun.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure. Real.
This is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel and the recordings of Ed Corcoran has been brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. With the engineering and technical assistance of Bob Schirego, the Golden Age of Radio is produced and edited by Brian Hartnett. This is Norm Peters.
Camel Cigarettes present Benny Goodman Swing School, the Tuesday evening rally of everybody everywhere who gets a lift from the new pulsating music of youth, swing.
The Lux Radio Theater brings you Rita Hayworth and Charles Corbin in This Love of Ours. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr.
The makers of Instant Chase and Sanborn Coffee present the Charlie McCarthy Show. This is Ken Carpenter, ladies and gentlemen, greeting you from Hollywood, California. On behalf of Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Sterr, Don Amici, and Marcia Hunt, and the Bickersons by Bill Rapp. Play-doh.